It's a special edition of Ask Dr. Drew on WTOP and WTOP.com. Now, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, your host Debbie Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Lots to talk about with Dr. Drew. Thanks to everyone for joining us this morning, and we welcome Dr. Drew to WTOP. For the next hour, we'll be taking your phone calls and questions. Here's how to ask Dr. Drew. Call us at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email us at WTOP.com. You can also send questions on our Facebook page or send a tweet. Use the hashtag AskThe.
Well, thank you, Dr. Drew, so much for being here at WTOP. We also want to mention Dr. Drew, of course, is a board-certified internist and an addiction medicine specialist. And we know that Dr. Drew is heard here on WTOP, his one-minute clinic segment airing twice daily on WTOP at 11:13 and 1:13. And we're really happy to have you here. Lots of things to tackle. And we're going to start off, I think, about World AIDS Day, which is Saturday. And to mark that occasion, you've produced a documentary that focuses on one of the major challenges in controlling and dealing with HIV and AIDS, and that's young people. So tell us a little bit more about what you're doing here in Washington. You're headed to the White House, and tell us about this documentary that you're working on.
This is basically a reality program that's constructed in a way that young people would understand it. We have to go where the young people are and give them programming that they will receive in order to give the message, right? Mm-hmm. And so we've designed the show specifically to do that, and we chronicle the lives of three young people living with HIV. And it's funny, HIV is something that people don't know the history of my career, but that's the reason I got involved in radio. I was a resident back in the early 80s, and a friend asked me to kind of participate in a radio show, and I thought, oh, whatever. I didn't know much about it, and what's this radio thing you speak of? And it was in the middle of the night back in the day, and it was a call-in type show, and lo and behold, young people, particularly back then when they didn't have internet, didn't have Wikipedia, and didn't have things to go search engines, they would call radio stations to try to get information. They would get it from the media. And here they were asking amazing questions. And at that time, we were just switching from calling gay-related intestinal disease syndrome to AIDS. We didn't have a causative agent. The term safe sex hadn't been coined yet. We just were working out the epidemiology. A single episode of pneumonia, pneumocystis pneumonia, harkened a six-month life expectancy. It was devastating at that time. I was telling people they were going to die every day.
Wow.
And young people didn't seem aware of this thing. I thought, I've got to get up on the radio and talk about this. They need to understand. And by the way, I think if you use a condom, that'll probably reduce the risk. We didn't know yet for sure, but I thought we've got to be talking to young people about this. And then we were pretty effective in educating and dealing with this thing. And actually, unprecedented in the history of medicine. I mean, think about it. It took us several thousand years to deal with syphilis. Mm-hmm. And in 20 years, a new syndrome was identified, the causative agent identified, a test for it identified, effective treatments rendered. I mean, that's unheard of in the history of medicine.
Pretty quick.
So it became a chronic illness from a life sentence. And I think it's fallen into the background. Lo and behold, we now have CDC publishing data that shows that over half of young people with HIV don't know they have it. Mm-hmm. So it is time to redouble our efforts, talk about this thing. Young people are more casual about it than they used to be because they do understand it as a chronic disease, but they also understand it can be devastating. People like you and me talking about it does not change their behavior. Giving them a relatable story from someone like them in a format that they understand, that tends to change young people's behavior.
When we come back, we want to hear more about some of the compelling stories that are presented in this documentary, and we want to talk more about how we can go about in the current age of educating young people about HIV. This is Ask Dr. Drew, a special edition on WTOP this morning until 11 o'clock. We'll be getting to your phone calls and emails and tweets as well. The number, 877-336-1035. Dr. Drew in the studio this morning at the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, and you can get a question to him right now at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Send a tweet, use the hashtag AskThe.
Dr. Drew involved in this MTV special, as we've been talking about, called I'm Positive, which airs at 7 o'clock on Saturday, which is World AIDS Day. You know, you mentioned, Dr. Drew, the CDC numbers that came out earlier this week. Slightly more than a quarter of all new HIV infections involve kids, really, 13 years old to 26 years old. This is really a wake-up call for parents and educators and healthcare professionals across the country. Do you think, yesterday we talked with Dr. Anthony Fauci about this, that mandatory AIDS testing should occur for children at their as a regular thing when they go to the pediatrician for their yearly checkups?
You know, I am very circumspect about mandatory interventions for medical treatments and or screening. However, they have now, the U.S. Preventative Task Force has given it an A-plus rating, so it will, it's required to be covered. Mm-hmm. And so doctors, there will be pushed to do more screening. And this whole piece of data that's come out will be a call to action, I'm sure. So there will be wider spread screening. To put a law on medical practice is always a bad idea. I
mean, so you can't equate this with vaccinations and other things?
Listen, if somebody will do a study, if there's good evidence that it's an important thing to do, I'm sure we'll do it. But I don't want to take that position myself. Doctors are very well trained. Mm-hmm. They need their attention directed a little bit more this way. Let's let them do their job.
Then how do we get to those young folks, so many of whom, according to the CDC study, who have HIV and don't know it?
That's a bigger issue, is how do you get people to access the system and get in the system? And by the way, once they get their status, get them enrolled in treatment, which is a whole other part of the conundrum here. And you mentioned earlier about educating young people about HIV, and I want to really caution particularly educators about this, because we do a great job of giving them information. We do a woeful job at getting them to change their behavior. Mm-hmm. Giving young people information does not change their behavior. Mm-hmm. Lecturing them in the classroom, giving them sex education classes, we have a long history of doing a good job with that, and yet the behaviors remain what they are. You change behavior by giving them a relatable source. That's why Loveline worked. Somebody their age, they hear them calling in with a problem. They're drawn into that problem. They relate to the story. Then they draw their own conclusions. They're not hearing information from on high that's sort of blah, 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 and mom telling them what they should or shouldn't do.
You know, it seems that it also has to reach the community. And
yes.
And there are cultural stigmas attached to this kind of discussion.
Another big issue here, because this disorder, this HIV disproportionately affects people of color.
Right.
African-American women right now, massively increasing population. And there's denial and there is stigma, and that's part of what we're trying to address here today.
How do you get, and we were talking about this with Dr. Fauci yesterday, how do you get multicultural organizations at the community level to become more engaged in this? There seems to be, with some, still some degree of denial about what's happening in their own communities.
For me, it's all about opening the conversation. It's, you'll see in the documentary, young people, again, back to the African-American issue, you'll see their families extremely open, extremely willing to embrace what's going on and seem to get it right away. There's no stigma. There's no distortions about what HIV is or how it can be transmitted. And yet you step right outside their front door and the community at large has all those distortions. So I think it is really us building a little army to go out there and
right.
keep the conversation going and elevate the sophistication of how we understand these things.
Did you see that as part of the documentary, as you all were seeing these stories played out before the cameras? Were all of the families involved embracing the HIV patient and they struggle with the community?
We don't see, you'll hear them talk about it. We don't actually see that so much. And again, with a couple of the kids, we have a gay African-American male, we have an African-American female, part of the story we follow. And they've personally been talking about this and how they're struggling to get people to reduce the stigma and to come to terms with this. They use a lot of humor and a lot of cajoling to get people to kind of come to terms with how things actually are as opposed to how they wish they were. And we have to really, this is a whole other topic, but we have to address straight on why there is distrust and be honest about that and say, yep, things that maybe certain communities have not been well served by authority figures and medical communities over history. But it's coming from the ground up now. It's coming from inside, grassroots. Let's go ahead and drop some of those stigmas.
What about the elephant in the room, though? How much does homophobia play into this?
You know, I asked our Otis is the young man that's in this, and he is just this great guy, and his parents are extremely, they are have no issues with him. In fact, they're part of the campaigns that they're lovely. It's hard for me to say, not being gay. It obviously has some element here. I'm sure the gay community would have an opinion about that. Otis sort of puts it in the same breath. He just puts it as denial about HIV and gay, being homosexual. Just sort of, we'll just push it aside. We don't ostracize it. We just don't really want to deal with it. Don't want to talk about it. It just sort of goes underground. And it's something that needs to be brought out again.
Yeah.
Now, with this documentary, what are you hoping that the message is for young people? As you indicated before, they can hear all the education, doesn't necessarily change their habits. What about these stories that may make a change in what they're doing?
You know, it's very funny. I when you ask that question, I have to just tell you a story of my own wife, who's we're in our 50s, and she goes, should I get tested? I think I need to get tested. We're not cheating. We're okay. But it has a when you see these stories, it really makes you think. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we hope it does. I mean, it's if it's affecting a 50-year-old, I hope it affects a 20-year-old the same way. Right. It's like you have to stop and go, this really could happen to me, anybody. It does. One mistake is enough sometimes. And it is something. 1.2 million people do have it. It is occurring. And these young people are such shining examples of how easy it happened, how easily it happens, and what can happen if you don't pay attention. Again, our message to the young people is condom every time, get tested regularly, pay attention.
All right, we will continue our discussion with Dr. Drew, and you'll get a chance to ask a question. I see the phone lines are lighting up at 877-336-1035. Dr. Drew in the studio taking your phone calls this morning at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Let's go to the phones now. Mary is calling in from Fort Washington. Mary, what's your question?
I know that most young people remain asymptomatic for a very long time, and that's one of the main reasons why they are so there's such a high undiagnosed rate among young people. So I was wondering, what are some of the first signs of HIV, and what should alert someone that they need to seek help from a doctor?
It's a great question, and I would sort of start out by saying, if you are sexually active and you are not practicing safe sex, you ought to bring that up with your doctor, and he or she ought to know to screen you at that point. So there's that. In terms of symptoms, let me tell you a cautionary tale. There's something called acute HIV infection. HIV is a virus, and it can cause a viral syndrome like a flu, kind of, like a severe flu. Mm-hmm. One of our subjects in the special, her name is Stephanie, had a severe flu. She had high fevers, lymphadenopathy, swollen lymph nodes, was prostrate for a week, went to the hospital three times because she wasn't getting better, was told each time, it's just bad flu, bad influenza, maybe H1N1. I don't think they even tested for that, but they did not test it for HIV. Mm. And that was a failure of the medical system. There's a young, sexually active female with a flu, a severe, like more than average type flu syndrome that's not going away. She needs an infectious disease workup. Our other gentleman, Otis, had merely some lymphadenopathy, just some swollen lymph glands. And he actually thought maybe he had, you know, tumor or something. He went in, he was tested, and was appropriately diagnosed. But as Mary brought up, more often than not, there are no symptoms. There's long periods of no symptoms whatsoever until, again, you start perhaps getting weight loss or getting fatigue or getting swollen lymph glands that don't seem to go away, or yeast in the mouth, or soreness in the gum, in the cheek and tongue area, or nothing. Which is very common for people to have no symptom, which is why so many don't know they are infected.
Mm. You know, the medical advancements have improved life tremendously for people who are living with HIV. Do you think, and I'm not saying there's a downside to this, but do you think that it's created a kind of a culture of laziness toward the disease now?
Absolutely. It's subtle. It's not severe, but it's like, oh, okay, we can live with that. And you can, which is the great news. I mean, all three of our kids are on treatment. Their viral loads are zero. Remember, by the way, if you get your viral loads to zero, you are terrifically reduced. You can reduce the risk of transmission of HIV by 96%. So that is a part of the prevention process, is getting properly treated.
But is that typical that you hear about kids like that who are being treated and followed and get the appropriate medications? Is that typical for the HIV population at large, or are most people getting sicker and sicker?
Unfortunately, as we're finding out, most people don't know they have it. In early detection, the earlier you get on treatment, the better, mm-hmm. the better the outcomes. And enrolling people in the procedure of being treated, it's cumbersome. And the two of our people actually had peer mentors, kids, other young adults who were being treated, who enrolled them into the system. Is extremely effective because it's something that it's a way of life. They've got to get used to seeing a doctor, taking a pill on a regular basis, getting tested on a regular basis. And a lot of people sort of dip back into that denial that the community supports, And there's a lot of witch doctoring out there where they're going to get cured by something and people die as a result.
And are the resources available to help people who perhaps can't afford to take those medications?
There is somewhat of a waiting list, but the resources are available. The point is there's many different patient-assisted sorts of programs out there, state assistance programs, and obviously insurances are mandated to take care of this as well. So most people do have access to good care.
Okay.
What will be the difference, in your estimation, in terms of diagnosis and getting treatment once the healthcare overhaul is fully implemented?
Well, that's why we're going to the White House today, to talk about that. This morning they were doing the international scene and what needs to be done there, where things are really desperate in many countries. And today we will be part of some of the panels and discussions about what we need to do as healthcare reform goes forward. As I said, I don't think I said this in this program, it was in the last hour, that the U.S. Preventative Task Force has given HIV testing an A-plus rating, which means that insurances have to pay for it, the healthcare reform will be required to pay for it, and doctors will be paying more attention, hopefully, to this particular screening.
What's your message to the president today?
Well, first, we're gonna share a beer. Me and Brock. Pull him aside. How was Mitt? How's your buddy?
Right. How was lunch?
How was lunch with Mitt? I'm not sure I will be able to deliver a message. Actually, I hope it's not me, and I hope it's my young people that are able to tell their story.
What would you want them to say?
I would want them to say, thank you, frankly, for paying attention to this and for bringing this as part of your policy, as an important piece of the healthcare reform going forward. That it is something they are living examples of. The fact that this is another chronic illness that we will need to be managing. It's something that is highly manageable, highly treatable. It's a growing population and ain't going away.
Lots more to talk about with Dr. Drew this morning. We have many other issues, as you know, that Dr. Drew covers on his weekday segments here on WTOP at 11:13 and 1:13. We're going to tip into some of those in a little more detail.
Holiday stress.
You guys are sort of smirking, grinning. What's on that call the call board?
We're getting ready.
We'll find out after traffic and weather. Stay with us. Your chance to ask a question as well coming up at 877-336-1035. Here's the number to call to ask Dr. Drew this morning, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email a question by going to WTOP.com. Send in questions on our Facebook page as well, or you can tweet us. Use the hashtag AskThe.
Dr. Drew, we're going to switch gears a little bit here from talking about HIV and AIDS to the holidays, which, of course, are upon us. And for a lot of folks, that means stress. A lot of people are trying to avoid that Martha Stewart syndrome, if you will, the pressure cooker of feeling like you have to do everything and be everything to everyone and get it done perfectly. A lot of folks losing sleep over it, physical aches and pains probably, maybe some depression. It's a hard time of year for a lot of people.
It is a hard time of year, depression being sort of the hallmark symptomatology that people fall into. Loneliness, feeling alone, feeling left behind, feeling disappointed. These are all common feelings. Even people who have family around them can go and feel disappointed because of the conflicts and whatever that emerge at the dinner table. So, yeah, it is an important time to take care of yourself, to exercise. To exercise lately has been measuring on some research as well as some antidepressant medication. So do not forget to exercise, even though it's cold outside. Be sure to sleep right. Be sure to do self-care, self-nurturing, because you may be disappointed by the end of the holidays.
And, a lot of people during the holidays also kind of self-medicate.
Sure.
And the overindulgence factor seems to be much higher. What do you advise people about alcohol use and other substances, especially during the holidays when they could be feeling more depressed?
Yeah, I think the big message during the holidays is the substances aren't going to solve your problems. They're going to make them worse. They look like a solution, but they are the problem. That's the way substances present themselves, like a solution. In fact, they're the problem. So when you are with your family and conflicts escalate, always look for alcohol. You'll find it in the mix there somewhere. And so while, yes, you may go deal with Aunt Jane by taking a couple pops before you go in there, when the conflicts emerge, this problem is fueled, rocket fuel, by the alcohol. And keep in mind, this is when people can lose control over substances as well. If you have a family history of alcoholism, one of the defining features of this disorder is that it has a genetic basis. If you have a family history and you feel yourself losing control, do not be afraid to say so. There are treatments for that. It's a disorder. You didn't ask for it. But once you lose control, the switch has been thrown on this thing we call alcoholism. And at that point, it needs treatment. And there's lots of people out there ready to help you.
You know, talk about, if you would, a little bit, the folks who are in recovery, mm-hmm. who are sober and are trying to desperately to mm-hmm. stay so. The holidays can be particularly difficult because you're surrounded by it.
It is, and there may be all sorts of meanings to holidays and when you previously would practice your disease, and there may be expectations from family members, and there may be still people in their disease that you have to interact with, and you may want to use. Of course you want to use. Here's the basic note. Meetings, meetings, meetings. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. More meetings, more meetings. Call your sponsor. Meet with your sober peers. Hang out. It's the same advice that we're giving to people without alcoholism, which is take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you have if you have HIV, make sure you take your medicines and you don't drink. And you know, there's things that we have to do. We lose track of our self-care during the holidays because we get so involved
caught
in
up.
Yeah, we're so caught up in it. And if you don't pay attention to yourself, there will be a price.
But don't pull back from social interactions.
Don't pull back. Gain the social support, but gain healthy social support. Sometimes that is from your family. Sometimes the family's the source of the stress. and make sure you maintain at least one close, intimate connection. I'm a big advocate of two brains together, that the intimate connection with another person is how we regulate our emotions, it's how we create meaning, it's how we create so much of what's important in our emotional landscape.
You know, the office party can be a dangerous place.
Are you telling me something about this place? meaning the glass enclosed nerve center, things go wild?
Well, we're not going to say anything about what goes on in here, but and alcohol obviously plays a huge role in that. What do people need to know about how they should present themselves at the holiday party that they're having with their coworkers?
Listen, it's not for me to tell you how to behave at a holiday party, but if, again, it's the same phenomenon, if things go bad. You know, I'm thinking about young people, adolescents. You know, whenever you have an unwanted outcome, you find alcohol there. And adults tend to kind of be the same way. They tend to be more on the excessive spectrum. And these are people, you know, in your workforce, you work with every day. Don't decide you're going to change the dynamics of your relationships with people you work with at an office party. Mm-hmm. You'll pay that price the rest of the year. Keep work, and keep your relationships on a steady course.
Let's go back to the phones. Lori has been holding on from Maryland with a question. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi, Dr. Drew. I watch your show, first of all, every night, and I think it's fabulous. I have a question in multiple sclerosis.
Mm.
My husband is 59 years old. He's been suffering with it for 20 years, and I'm just wondering if you ever consider doing a documentary on that, because I would love to get some spotlight on the fact that there is a cultural laziness with respect to understanding it, getting help for it. There is no cure. And insurances don't cover custodial care, which is I've had to be forced into a role of caretaker and turn my home over into an assisted living complex because the government and insurance, there aren't the support out there for it. So I didn't know if you were at some point have an agenda of further documentaries, but there's so much still to be discussed out there and brought into the spotlight.
Right, Lauren. I appreciate the call, and thanks for mentioning the HLN program. That's 6 at 9 on HLN. I really love doing that show, and we do get to get into topics like Lori is suggesting, really more serious medical kinds of conditions. And multiple sclerosis, I can only give you, Lori, the perspective from that of a general physician, which is you're feeling this acutely because this is the disease of your loved one. But I assure you there are 600 other conditions wives of or people suffering with who feel precisely the same stress that you do, that there's not enough attention on their disease, that there isn't custodial care, there isn't adequate resources for chronic illness, for what the medications cost, for what the particular needs are in the household. It's a struggle every day in this country right now. Our system is broken. It is, and that's what Laura's really talking about here. Mm-hmm. Multiple sclerosis is one of what are called demyelinating diseases, where your immune system attacks the cells that produce the myelin sheaths around your neurons, and it is progressive and it is devastating. The fact that he's lived at all for 20 years with this, which is a really good sign, mm-hmm. Lori. I'm sure he's getting at least adequate care, and it is something that can be put into remission these days.
The number to call to ask Dr. Drew is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email a question at WTOP.com. You can join the discussion on our Facebook page as well, or send us a tweet. Use the hashtag #AskThem.
Well, you just heard it's trending here on WTOP, the arrest of Lindsay Lohan last night in New York City. Police say she hit a woman during an argument at a nightclub there. And Dr. Drew, it begs the question, you know, we've heard a lot about Lindsay Lohan and perhaps allegations of substance abuse and many, many problems in the past with police. What do you think has to happen here with Lindsay Lohan?
Well, I don't know about allegations of substance abuse. I mean, the court has been very clear. She's an addict and needs treatment. They just haven't mandated it. And she's been – here's the thing I love people when they say, well, somebody claims not to be an addict, yet they were treated three different times. You have to meet criteria for drug addiction. You have to be firmly diagnosed in order to gain admission to a drug treatment program. If you admit non-addicts to a drug treatment program, you'll lose your license. Mm-hmm. So she has drug addiction. She was treated at Cirque Lodge, if you all remember, for 6 months and was doing well after that. So she's a drug addict. She's a severe drug addict, and we're all looking at the mounting consequences of drug addiction here. We need to stop pointing at her and start praying for her. This is somebody that's going to have – I hope she survives this. I hope she comes to term with it and gets treatment. She needs to go away for a year. She'll be a great recovering person one day, but in the meantime, her life is in jeopardy.
I think that's the challenge, the go away for a year. It's not going to happen unless someone either on the justice side takes it more seriously or someone who is involved more closely with her.
Well, her dad tried to do an intervention the other day, and she ran away from that. The justice side, yes, I'm disappointed that they have mandated treatment. They could save her life, and yet mm-hmm. they've been monkeying around with all the nuances of her probation and this and that. That's all her obfuscating and getting out from under. The other person that needs to be involved in this is her. Once she decides she wants to get well, she'll do whatever it takes, and that's what it's going to take.
Does
a
it
long
take
period of time.
Hitting bottom for somebody to
well,
like that?
Yeah, of course, but how big a bottom does she need to hit? She's
right.
been skating along the bottom for mm-hmm. a while. I have this horrible, horrible image that she's going to lose a limb or something horrible is going to happen to her physically before she finally gets there.
You have to wonder. Anyone else, if it were any one of us, I'm almost certain that either we would have hit some sort of bottom by now or been imprisoned by now.
Right. Well, that's one interesting point is has she been treated differently because of her status or has she had access to special legal care and maybe in prison she would have found sobriety. That's a possibility. Mm-hmm. To say that any of us would have seen the light by now,
no.
it's hard to say.
Not
that.
Saying that,
yeah.
But I'm sure something would have happened differently than
oh,
what's
I see.
Happening with her.
Yeah, that maybe. Well, that's an interesting point, which is do celebrities, and I think you're right. I think you're right, Mark, because celebrities go further with their disease than mm-hmm. the average person. It's why we see so much of it out there. If you develop something like that here, your human resources would pull you aside and say, hey, if you want your job, you got to do something.
Right.
We care about you. You got to do something now. Celebrities don't have that. They're insulated from those kinds of consequences, and that's why their disease progresses to such an extent.
I want to ask you about New Year's resolutions. We're getting to that time of the year where everybody says they're going to make one. And I want to know if there's any evidence that you've seen empirically that people are more likely to keep a New Year's resolution when they make it to start January 1st as compared to any other time during the year when they resolve to do something. And then I want to also find out from you what you think our top resolution should be as a community, as a whole, what you think is important in
okay.
terms of in terms of making a promise to yourself.
Okay. So I'm going to make a statement at first that is going to undermine my top resolution. So here's my first statement. Don't make resolutions. Stop it.
I knew that was coming.
They don't work. The research is very clear on that. Nobody keeps their resolutions. Whatever you need to change your lifestyle and take care of yourself on a daily basis, that is a daily phenomenon. That's not something you just start on New Year's. Stop it already with the New Year's resolutions. You know what you need to do to live healthy. Start now. Don't wait till January 1st. Start right now.
So and what, those would are the top, people, what would your
well,
top?
Well, my top thing is, I'm writing a book on this, in fact, and I sort of telegraphed this a few minutes ago, that I think in this country particularly, we do not emphasize the importance of our interpersonal lives, our relationships. I'm not talking about romantic lives. I'm talking about the quality of our relationships. I urge people to see how we see the world is very much dependent on our relationships, and perhaps seeing the world with a new pair of glasses is a resolution for the future. Start hanging around people that you wouldn't normally hang around with, different kinds of people that are perhaps different than you or see things differently or don't fit the way you normally look for friends and fittedness. challenge yourself a little bit and get close to those people and spend time with them. We don't spend time, quiet time, in our relationships and our closeness. It changes our brain. It's one of the most powerful. It's how therapy works. We're just sitting, another satellite brain is helping us regulate our emotions. We can actually do that in our day and out life. It's very healthy, and we've lost track of it completely.
When we come back from traffic and weather, we want to touch a little bit more on the issue of technology, what it's doing to our relationships.
In the way of all that, right?
Yeah.
And certainly adding perhaps to the level of stress and what people are doing to alleviate that stress. Some aren't doing anything at all because of the economy and other issues. They're continuing to add on to the stress. So we want to get your advice on that. And we'll take some more phone calls to people hanging on at 877-336-1035. Hold on. We'll get to you after traffic and weather. Dr. Drew making a house call and taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. Final minutes of the show with Dr. Drew before he heads to the White House. 877-336-1035. Give us a call now if you have a question. As we head back to the phones, Robert is calling in from the district. Robert, you're on with Dr. Drew.
Dr. Drew.
Hey, Robert.
Hi. Listen, I spent Thanksgiving morning doing CPR on my wife, which she had an alcohol level of 0.7.
Oh, God.
Put some Halcyon to sleep and some lorazepam to make herself less nervous.
Yeah.
She's been doing this for 15 years.
Yeah.
I've looked at a number of places. She's been in a number of places. A lot of times I'll go on the internet to try and find a new place, but it sounds like it's sort of a scam. It's like buying a used car. They're more interested in selling the product.
Yes, you got to be very careful. Yes, yes, sir. Listen, first of all,
that's another question.
Oh, you know, right now I'm out on the road. I would love to be able to help, but I would not be the right person. I can maybe hang on the line. I'll talk to you about some referrals specifically off the air. But first of all, it's just heartbreaking. I can just hear in your voice how painful this is. And thank God she survived this particular overdose. Yeah, 0.7 alcohol level is the real deal. On top of that, the benzodiazepine hypnotics, which typically go together these days. So, my friend, she needs to spend a good deal of time somewhere. Where has she been treated in the past?
She's going to Connecticut, Silver Hill. She's
What's the longest period of treatment 30, she's been?
30 days.
And what does she do after that 30 days? Does she go to sober living? Does she continue to go to meetings?
She's gone to a number of meetings, and she on the way out of the meeting, she'll have a drink.
Okay. So she needs to spend an extended – this is what we were talking about, Lindsay, earlier. Mm-hmm. You need to spend an extended period of time. Once she's had the – people some have a grave misconception that treatment is like a car wash, and the patients want it to be this way too. Like, 30 days, I'm fixed. No. 30 days, you are enrolled in the process. Mm-hmm. We have just begun the process now. She – and I'm sorry to say this, but probably needs to spend 6 months in a residential or sober living type setting with ongoing careful supervision, no benzodiazepines, no addictive medicines of any kind that will keep re-triggering her disease. That may be part of the problem. A lot of people leave treatment on meds, no meds, antidepressants, okay, fine, but that's it. I am so sorry. You hang on the line. I'll talk to you about what kinds of treatment you might look into off the air, okay?
Dr. Drew, we want to talk a little bit about technology and the role that it plays in depression or detachment syndrome. It's come to my attention. There's actually something called nature deficit disorder for kids who no longer get outside to play. They're
nature
inside.
Deficits.
NDD.
It's like being the glass enclosed nerve center all the time.
That's right. Hold up inside with their smartphones and their mobile devices. How unhealthy is that, especially for kids?
Well, the reality is, you know, I think a lot about this because this question comes up all the time and parents are concerned about it. Everyone's concerned about it. What is the impact of technology on our relationships, on our kids, on our parenting? You know, some parents – let me just – the headline that I would like to share is that all of what goes on the internet is a pseudo-relationship. It's not real relationship. So if you think I'm in touch with my kids all the time because we text every half hour
– right.
No, that's not a relationship. It sustains a relationship, but it's a relationship that's on hold. Mm. Relationships occur when two bodies are next to each other, and that's what you need to build and develop a relationship. I understand that you can express what you're thinking to the other person. It's not empty. It's not zero, but it's a pseudo-intimacy. It's not a real intimacy. So please don't think you're actually parenting when you're involved in that sort of thing. And then the other headline is, we don't know. We don't know the full impact that this is going to have on the development, personality structure, emotional landscape of young people. This is the first generation being reared with this. Right. We all look at it and go, oh, my goodness, this is not going to go well. But if you remember, for our population, people said the same thing about televisions. And then they said the same thing about computers. And I'm certain we have deficits from those things. I'm certain. But what they are and how they operate, time will tell ultimately. in the meantime, this, the fact that we have these conversations, very positive. People need to limit their time on these media and focus back. Remember my top resolution about being close to another person?
Right.
That applies to all our relationships.
It's focus a tough battle, though, for a lot of people.
It's impossible,
yeah.
Isn't it? I battle it all the time, too.
Right.
I'm guilty. Guilty.
Yeah, but we're all addicted.
Yeah, we're all guilty. But we got to keep it top of mind.
Right.
Well, for adults, we're certainly seeing that it is adding to the stress level. People are always connected to the office.
Yeah.
We keep our smartphones.
Right, it's supposed to reduce our, so make us more efficient.
Right.
It maybe makes us more efficient, but it seems to make us more stressed. We're never offline.
It is addictive, and I wonder what is it that we can do?
Are there programs for that?
Right.
Well, there are
programs.
You
got an app for that?
Thank you, Mark. Well said. There are programs for video game addiction. There has been for a long time, we in sort of the addictive field have talked about something called process addiction, which is getting engaged in these processes, these sort of intricate kinds of procedural phenomenon that tie us up, and obsessively we get our OCD gratified through that.
Shopping or gambling?
Well, it's a little different, but yes, it goes in that same category of behavioral addictions. Uh-huh. Yeah, and now I blanked on your question, Mark. Is there the treatment for video game addiction? Now,
yeah.
there actually is. There, people are talking about putting that in the diagnostic manuals. And I will tell you that my opinion is when that stuff really gets out of control, and this is my personal opinion, the way I've seen it, there's almost always an underlying psychiatric condition that when you treat, all those other process compulsions tend to settle down. Different with gambling and sex, where you really have to go after those specifically.
How do you treat it? What do you do?
I mean, the internet stuff?
Yeah, video games, all of it. I mean,
well, again, it's like changing.
You can't put it down.
Listen, changing behavior is hard,
yeah.
And particularly changing behavior that's compulsive and you don't want to change, like eating disorders, things like that. Mm-hmm. Very hard. 12-step has a role to play, and as I said, therapy has a role to play, and then mm-hmm. treating the underlying issues that may be people trying to escape whatever affect is there through these outlets.
Dr. Drew, thank you so much for coming in with us. We know you have a busy agenda today, heading to the White House to discuss your reality program, I'm Positive, with MTV on World AIDS Day, 7 o'clock on Saturday.
7 o'clock on Saturday. It's a special. It's very impactful. Please watch. It's a good show.
Excellent. Best of luck with that. We look forward to hearing how your visit at the White House
will. We'll have the kids with the three kids that you follow on the documentary, and I don't call it a documentary because the kids won't watch, on the special, are going to be with us at the White House today. So.
Excellent.
Thanks,
best
Dr.
of luck.
Drew.
Thanks for coming by.